Thank you so much for coming out. Welcome back to Emma's here in person. To everyone who is joining us by Zoom. We wish a refuah shleima to all those who need to be on Zoom this week, and hopefully we'll be back in person next week. Last week we began to learn Sefer Daniel, to learn the Sefer that focuses on the man who, as we said last week, models for us how to live in Galus, not how to prepare for or how to try to avert Galus, nor how to be misabel over the Churban, but it teaches us how to live in and thrive in Galus, even as he's dreaming of Geula. And that bifurcation, that sort of that those dual themes of living in Galus and dreaming of Geula. So on the one hand, that's sort of the two halves of the Sefer, like we began Torah last week. The first six prakim are the different episodes in the life of Daniel as he serves under various emperors of two different empires. And the latter six prakim are Daniel's visions and some of his tfilos that focus very much on unfolding history and on Geula. But even in the first six prakim, which are going to be our primary focus in the series, even the first six prakim, we're going to be watching, particularly tonight, we're watching Daniel simultaneously living in Galus and grappling with and interpreting dreams of Geula. Because the second parak, you know, last week we saw Daniel was taken to the palace. One of the four boys from Eretz Yehuda who are named as being taken to the palace, Daniel together with Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, they're taken to the palace as young boys. And Nebuchadnezzar has this dream of cultivating staff. They're going to be trained, and they're going to be brought into the culture. They're going to be brought into the education. And they're going to be Nebuchadnezzar's men. And we saw right last week that Daniel was part of the program and not part of the program at the same time. Or more precisely, while he's part of the program and he's getting the education and he's growing both physically and mentally, and as a matter of fact surpasses everyone else, at the same time they are absolutely locked in to following the din, absolutely locked in to being careful about harchaka from Avodah Zarah, being careful about harchaka from Machalos Asuras, being careful about kashrus. And as we end with last week, so the larger theme that the Gemara sees, the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah sees in the first parak, is Daniel is sort of the first paradigm for the notion of using food to create the Havdalah ben Yisrael Amim. The idea of Machal Yakum, Shemen Akum, Yein Akum, and maybe Bishal Akum sort of finds its roots in Daniel's hesitancy about the Nebuchadnezzar's food and his assistance to, with a lot of agility and with a very savvy way, with a lot of finesse, we should say. A lot of finesse, he manages to not upset anyone, and yet at the same time, effectively maintain his standards of kashrus. And ironically, while the emperor Nebuchadnezzar is seeking to perhaps create people who will help to homogenize the Jews into the Babylonian Empire, Daniel, at that very moment, is actually creating a paradigm for how a Jew maintains his separateness and his uniqueness. And that brings us now to the second parak. The second parak is famous for, as being the first dream of Nebuchadnezzar, but as we're going to see, it's so much more than just a dream. An overview of the first parak, and then let's dive in a bit. the curtain rises, and Nebuchadnezzar is having a dream, and he's terribly frightened about the dream, and he doesn't remember what he dreamt. But he remembers that it was frightening. So now he has two issues. He doesn't remember what he dreamt, nor does he know what it means. But he knows that it must have a very significant message for him. And so he begins to call in his occult staff. His types of staff are called in. And they're given this unsolvable, undoable mission. Tell me what I dreamt and what it means. This back and forth ensues. They say, it's not really doing, no one can do that. You tell us a dream, then we'll tell you what it means. But we can't guess what you dreamt. You yourself don't remember what you dreamt. And back and forth and back and forth. And Nebuchadnezzar very quickly tires of them and tells them that he's going to have his staff, you know, turn them into fillets. That's more or less what he says. And I'm going to turn you into fillets. Nebuchadnezzar played hardball. He was not a kind man. And your homes will be destroyed. Do what I say, or else. Obviously, they have no option. They have no capacity to do this. Daniel hears about it. Daniel reaches out and says, "Let me work on this." And ultimately, and he davens. And ultimately, he does work on it. And it's sort of the first half of the parak is this back and forth. And then the second half of the parak is what we really think the parak is about, which is the actual dream, where Daniel shows up to Nebuchadnezzar and says, "Let me tell you what you dreamt and what it means." And he describes this whole fantastic dream of the statue and the wrecking ball, a multi-material statue. You take a look at beginning in the parsha begins pasuk lamed aleph. He says, he begins to describe the statue. I should, before we go on, I should just explain the reason why the parak is laid out in the way that it is that much of Sefer Daniel is in Aramaic, beginning with the fourth pasuk of this parak. Parak Beis, pasuk Dalet, in the middle. You see, Vayidabru HaKastim HaMalach HaRamis. Pasuk Dalet begins with the Kastim respond, one of the groups of occult magicians, respond to the king, to the emperor in Aramaic, and then the Psukim vault into Aramaic. Malka Amun Chayin, so on and so forth. I wasn't sure if everyone's Aramaic. I figured some of you may have a slightly rusty Aramaic. So there are various translations that put together over the years. For the purpose of putting something together on paper, the easiest was Wikipedia actually has a translation laid out in various formats. I reformatted a little bit, but here you have sort of side by side the Psukim in the original Aramaic together with the translation I did, as you mentioned, wanted to be somewhat sensitive to people's eyesight. And I figured you're probably doing somewhat more reading of the Hebrew than the Aramaic. So you have them both, but the Hebrew is in a larger font size than the Aramaic. So here in the second half of the second half of the Parak, which is usually the major focus, it really begins essentially in the Pasuk Lamed Aleph. It says, "Ant Malka, Chazei Aves, you king, here's what you saw." Roa Hayisa, Vehine Tzel Nachar Gadol, he says, there was this one, you saw this massive statue, and it was, the head was gold, and the chest was silver, and then the abdomen was Nechoshes, was copper, and then the legs are, the upper legs are iron, and then at the bottom, the feet are a mixture of iron and pottery, iron and ceramic. This is Daniel telling Nebuchadnezzar what he saw. He said, "You want to know what your dream was and what it means? Here's what you saw." And presumably at that point Nebuchadnezzar begins to remember. Okay, good. So we're going to get back to that in a moment. Fantastic. We're going to get back to this in a moment. And then he describes that there's this massive wrecking ball, but not a swinging wrecking ball, but this enormous ball comes rolling in and shatters, rolls over and shatters, destroys the entire statue. And then that ball grows into a tremendous mountain that fills the earth. And he says, Nebuchadnezzar, that's what you saw, the statue and the wrecking ball. Then it begins to explain what it all means, and that it's the first vision, certainly not the last vision in Sefer Daniel, that describes the stages of history that will follow Babylonia. Nebuchadnezzar is reigning supreme in the Babylonian Empire, and that's the golden head, and then the successive steps, the silver and the copper and the iron toy, refer to various empires that will follow. Paras, Madai, Yavan with the rise of Alexander, and then perhaps a reference to Rome. And the ball that ultimately destroys the statue and grows to take over the world is a reference to Melech HaMashiach. And this is in the second half of Sefer Daniel, this theme returns again of the four Malchios and ultimately Melech HaMashiach. So he is, as I mentioned, in this parak, Daniel is living in Galus, and Nebuchadnezzar, he's telling Nebuchadnezzar what Nebuchadnezzar dreamt about both Galus and Geula. And when people learn Perek Sheni, I think usually the focus is on the dream itself. But I actually want to focus primarily, I think it's fascinating to look at the first half. And we'll actually start with the first pasuk. What seems like mere lead up to the dream itself is tremendously fascinating and has a tremendous amount to teach us. We'll have a chance now to at least to draw some of what we can from the opening psukim. Beginning with the very first pasuk and a comment of Rashi, amplified by the Malbim. So there was those little itty bitty details that we tend to ignore. The date you sort of brush by. But if you've been paying attention, it's in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar. And he has dreams, he's very disturbed and he's not sleeping well because of these dreams. He goes on to call Chartumim, Ashafim, Achashvim, Kastim, various groups of occult predictors, magicians, and so forth, and they come to the king, etc. But before you even get to the content, Shnashtayim, you're number two. Daniel isn't even on the scene in year number two, and let alone in a position to be called in. So Rashi quotes from one of the works of the Tanaim, the Seder Olam, that this is clearly not the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, it's the second year post-Churban of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. or as the Malbim puts it, it's the second year of the expanded reign of Nebuchadnezzar. The Churban seems to have marked a significant step in Nebuchadnezzar amassing power, and Nebuchadnezzar expanding his scope. So it's in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's post-Churban reign that explains how Daniel is old enough. It explains how Daniel is even on the scene, and how he's old enough, and how he's done. Maybe he had 3 years of training, but this is long afterwards, because there's more than a decade elapses between Galus Yechaniah, when Daniel was taken into Galus together with Mordechai and Chaim and Shalvazari and so forth, on the one hand, and Galus Sidkiyahu, more than a decade later when the Beit HaMikdash is actually destroyed. So at this point, Daniel's already long done with his training, and he's a person of some stature. And as we're going to see, he's going to come on the scene, though not immediately. It also, the Malbim points out, that the context, so why is the Tanakh even interested in telling me it's Shnashtayim after the Churban, because at this point Nebuchadnezzar is already thinking more globally. Nebuchadnezzar is already, he's not just getting started, he's already made very significant strides forward, he's already peaking in his career, he's already really reached a very significant stage in his career, he's already beginning to think about not just sort of the day by day, but where is this all leading? And what does succession look like? And what does legacy look like? And that's exactly what he dreams about, in the broader sense. What's the rest of, where is the Babylonian Empire going to lead, and how is the rest of history going to unfold after that? Yeah, question.
Beginning, the echoes to the story of Yosef, it indicates Shmasayim Yomim, far will fall in
the... That's fascinating.
I don't know if somebody else is going to say that, but...
Is that what you were going to say?
I was wondering what Yosef and Daniel may have had in common.
Yes, so there definitely are a lot of parallels. And many who write on Daniel point out there are a lot of parallels in Yosef and Daniel. You can even, Yosef, Daniel, and Esther as well. But particularly Yosef and Daniel, there are an extraordinary number of parallels. Yosef, Daniel, and Esther are all court Jews. They're all sort of early exemplars of Jews who are operating in a non-Jewish court. And right, both Yosef and Daniel are called upon to interpret Chalamos. Daniel, it's even more extreme. He probably at least remembered, seems to have remembered what he dreamt, but he wasn't happy with any of the solutions. Daniel is also comes after everyone else had tried. Here, no one else even tried. And the Shnosayim is interesting also. There's two more years of the Gullus of Yosef versus 2 years of the more intense second stage of Gullus of Akal Yisrael. Yeah, that is very fascinating. And then what's the ask? So it's interesting, in Pasuk Beis, the king calls the Chartumim, the Ashafim, and so on and so forth. L'hagid la'melech halom osav. They're called upon to tell the king his dreams. By Yavo yamdu l'fnei ha'melech. And they come. The Rambam points out, if you read the pasuk carefully, it sounds like they were already told what they would need to do. They get a message before they arrive. They get a message, not just the king wants you, but the king wants you to, and not even interpret, the king wants you to tell him his dreams. So they already know. They already know what it is, presumably. Presumably Nebuchadnezzar understands this is going to require, you know, all of their magic, and they're going to need to be in an ideal state. And if they're standing in front of the king, they're not really equipped to ply their trades. It says, you guys are still home, you got your books, and you got your quiet, and you can focus, and you can meditate, do whatever you need to do, work on it now, so when you show up, you have something to tell me. And they show up anyhow, knowing that they can't follow through. One wonders why. But they show up, and Nebuchadnezzar tells them the question, and they respond. The way they respond is really strange. I'm very scared. And the custom respond in Pasuk Dalet. There's a lot of back and forth. They say to him in Pasuk Dalet, well, you know, you should long live the king. Would you please tell us what your dream was? And he says to them, no, I already told you. You need to tell me the dream. If you don't tell me the dream, we're turning you into fillets. Hadavim tesabdun, nisachim teyasu. Really quite the gory. And he says, if you tell me the dream, I'm a nice guy. You tell me the dream, I'll make you all billionaires. But if you don't tell me the dream, and then vayanu shenis, anu tinyanus. Again they say, oh, well tell us, chelma yemar la'avdoi, tell us, the king will tell us his dream, to tell his servants his dream, and then we'll be glad to tell you the answer. And here as an aside, just sort of a fascinating curiosity, an English phrase that until I opened Daniel Parag Bez never knew is actually a biblical phrase. The king says to them, I know that you're buying time. Idna atun zavnin. Zmanatem konim. You're trying to buy time. You're trying to delay. He says, I'm on to you guys. And he says again in Pasuk Tes, if you don't tell me, I'm telling you in advance, if you don't tell me my dream, you guys are gone. Tell me now. Tell me the dream and tell me the pisrum. So at this point, so that they already went through two rounds. Very strange. You're standing in front of the emperor. They sounded foolish the first time because they should have known that this is what they're being asked to do. Come tell me the dream. And they sound even more foolish the second time. As though they're just obfuscating. Without any reference to any current events. But the king asks them a question and they start talking through their head. The king asks the question again and says, well, answer the question. I didn't ask you for your perushim. I asked you for the dream. Don't tell me why you can't. I asked you for the dream. And then they begin to, at first they didn't even explain why they can't. They just kept ignoring what the emperor had said and keep asking, well, tell us a dream and we'll respond. Strange. And then they begin to tell the emperor that we can't. In Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Aleph, again they say it twice. Lo Yisai En Hashal Yabeshta, there is no human being on dry land, no man on earth who could do that. That's impossible. Who could tell Devar HaMelech? And they say again in Pasuk Yud Aleph, what you're asking for is very difficult. Lo Yisai, there is no one who can do this. No human being can do this. No human being can do this. And the king is ready to kill them. And then Daniel hears in Pasuk Yedalad, Daniel goes over to Aryoch, who we already met in last week's parak. The Sar HaTavachim, he is the Sar HaTavachim is also a phrase that's reminiscent of the story of Yosef. And he's presumably the one who's tasked with this massacre to kill all the Chachamim. All the wise men of Babylonia are going to be executed by Aryoch because this group couldn't come through. Daniel comes over and he says, well, what's going on? Pasuk Tezvav, why is the king out? Why is everyone being killed? Aryoch tells him and he says, oh, give us some time. And then he begins to daven. So let's think for a few minutes of what we just saw. So this the first quarter, the first segment of the first half of the parak. You wonder what their what the back and forth. So the Malbim suggests that they double things twice because they were trying to solve this problem. There's the first time they thought initially the reason why they ignore the king's request and they tell him in Pasuk Dalet, tell us what your dream is and then we'll be glad to tell you the Pisron. Obviously they don't know what the dream is, but they imagine, well, what do they think they're going to accomplish? The king doesn't remember. So initially they imagine that that he's trying to test them. They figure it's a riddle. He wants to see what they're made of. He wants to see how capable they are. So he wants to see if they can even call his dream. Okay, but Lamaisi probably knows the dream. Oh, he forgot the dream. Nah, he's just trying to play games with us. So we'll ignore the fact that we're not coming through 100%. Let's come. What he really wants, they're trying to be solution sellers. He doesn't really want the dream. He really wants the Pisron. So we'll tell him the Pisron. We'll tell him the Pisron. And that they figured they can do. That they figured they can do. And moreover, they think that they can access the Pisron because they may be able to access that information through their, whatever they think they're doing with their astrology and so on, you know, staring into crystal balls and so on and so forth. The thing is, we probably know the answer to his question. His question is really, what's the dream telling me? We probably know that material. We just don't know what his dream is, so we have no way of figuring out which point of fact does he need to hear. So just tell us your dream. They're trying to be solution sellers the way Yosef was. Yosef, in fact, here's a sort of a different type of parallel. Yosef, in fact, is the original solution seller. And he comes to Paro and he says, here's what your dream was, and here's what you need to do about it. Right? He's a real marketer. It's not just answering the question. Here's how you should handle it. So that's what they're trying. They're trying to make an end run. We're not going to answer your question. Instead, we'll give you what you really want. You don't really want to know your dream. You really want the Pisron. So give us something, and we'll give you the Pisron, and you'll be happy. And the king says, no, I'm not going to be happy. I actually want to know what the dream is. And that's why he pushes back in Psukim Hei and Vav. So then what are they thinking the second time? They tried that. They tried that, and he's not biting. So why do they think? Did they not realize who they're dealing with? The man didn't become emperor of Babylonia for nothing. So the answer is, the Malbim suggests, if you look at the language, there's one letter that helps you in Pasuk Zayin. Anotin yanus v'amrin, v'yanus shenis v'yomru, malka chelma yeymar. As the king should tell us the dream. Hamelech es hachalom yomar la'avadav. He should tell us, and then we will be glad to tell you the Pisron. So then they're thinking, you know, maybe the king is just anxious. He's anxious, and he forgot it. He did forget it. At this point, they realize, okay, maybe he did forget it. But take a few days, and that's why it's in future tense. When you'll tell us the dream, we'll tell you the Pisron. Take your time. There's no rush. You'll remember. And at that point, he doesn't trust them anymore. At that point, he begins to talk about them lying. In Pasuk Tes, he talks about Kazav. Mila Kedeva, you are lying to me. And that's why, as a matter of fact, he stresses, you will tell me the dream. Even if I remember it, I'm not even going to tell you the dream. Because now it's no longer just a matter of, I want to remember what the dream is and I want to know what it means. I don't trust you guys anymore. I don't trust you guys anymore. At that point, they realize that they have no options. There's no way they're going to talk their way out of it. And so there's no way they can produce for the king. They thought maybe they could produce a Pisron without a chalom. They thought they could produce, you know, we can't give you the Pisron now, we'll give the Pisron in the future. At this point, they realize they're sort of backed into a corner. So now they begin to explain, well, no one can do this. No one can do this, and the king doesn't buy that either. The king doesn't buy that either. Now, it's interesting that Malbim points out, and I'll give you the Malbim's approach, but I think there's another angle as well that we'll come back to, is not only did they go through two rounds of trying to obfuscate with the king and say, well, why don't you, you know, if you tell us a dream, we'll tell you the Pisron. But they in Psukim Yud and Yud Alf, they also seem to repeat themselves. In Pasuk Yud, Lo Yisaya Nashal Yabeshta, there is no man on earth, on dry land, Dimilas Malka Yuchal Lachavaya, who could say what it is the king wants him to say. He could say the Devar HaMelech. Impossible. Impossible. And that's why no great king ever asked this of anybody. It's an impossible task. And then they repeat themselves. Pasuk Yudalef. Milsa di Malka She'el Yakira Achar Lo Yisai. There is no one. Lo Yisai. Lo Yesh. There is no one else who could come through with this. So why the repetition? So the Malbim suggests that they're talking about two different, they're sort of peeling away for the, trying to explain to the emperor that there are multiple layers of impossibility in terms of what he's asking. Because they're saying the first time, they said, no one could say Devar HaMelech. So he suggests that Devar HaMelech doesn't mean to fulfill the king's request. It means literally the words of the king. In other words, even if you knew, I couldn't tell you what you're talking about behind closed doors. I couldn't tell you. We can't access state secrets. We can't access what you speak about if we're not there. In other words, even if you were asking us for telepathy, you know it, you're thinking about it, can we guess it? We don't do that. We don't do telepathy. And then they say, and this is worse than telepathy, at least if you had it in your head, this is what to talk about, you don't know either. It's like the joke about Ruzin and Ruzin to Ruzin. The secrets are, you know it, I don't know. But the Ruzin is the secrets of secrets. Even you yourself don't know what it means. You don't know what you're thinking. So how am I supposed to figure out what you once thought, but it's no longer in your mind? So that's the Malbim's approach. So they're trying, and they're really just sort of digging their feet, digging their feet further and further into their mouths. The king isn't going to have none of it, and he realizes that they're not taking him seriously. So at this point, he stops talking, and he just gets down to action. He calls in Aryach and says, "Well, the conversation is over. I tried. We're not getting anywhere." Now Daniel comes to Aryoch, and once again, in the last couple of sukkim we had seen before, he's showing the same finesse that we saw in Parag Aleph. Because he says to Aryoch, "Oh, what's going on?" And Pasuk says, "Well, oh, why is the king so upset? Why is everyone being killed?" And Aryoch explains to him. Now, Daniel was around the palace, and Daniel was very well placed. So presumably he knew what was going on. But Daniel is in a tight spot here. Because he hadn't shown up initially when there was a call for all the particular categories of Chachamim. It wasn't all Chachamim. It was the Ashafim, the Kastim, and so on and so forth. Daniel had not perhaps been a member of any of those categories. And perhaps also he decided, he had heard what the issue was, and decided that no good would come out of trying to take on an impossible task. But Daniel figured the wisest thing to do is just duck and let that conversation happen without him. The problem is, the consequences of the conversation spiral. And the king doesn't just say, we're going to kill all the Kastim and the Ashafim. The king says in Pasuk Yigimel, all the Chachamim, Chakimayim is Katlin, all the Chachamim will be killed, which includes Daniel, Hanan, Mishael, Azariah, and probably hundreds of other people, Jews and non-Jews alike. So at this point, Daniel's just in a little bit of a tight spot because he wants to insert himself and see if he can solve the problem. But at the same time, if he just marches himself in, they'll be like, where were you up until now? Do you not care about the king? The king has been pulling out his hair over these dreams. Where were you? So Daniel initially thought it would be wiser to not get involved. Now he realizes he needs to backtrack. So that's what Daniel says to Aryoch. See, he makes as though, sort of asks innocently, oh, like, what's going on? As though he's never heard about this. This is the first he hears of it. Oh, he doesn't say that. He sort of gives that impression. And Aryoch tells him. And that's why it says that Daniel comes to the king and says, give me a couple of minutes, give me a couple of hours, give me some time, and I will solve this for you. I will solve this for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Daniel seems to have, even from a very young age, this like hyper-confidence that he can, borderline like on a chutzpah, that he can somehow tap into Hashem and get away, like make things work. Like he's, like that he even goes initially like, I'm not going to eat your food, I'm going to do a I don't say that in a kavod way, that he's very confident that he'll make it work out, and Hashem is going to back him up with
right.
The eating, or now he has no idea at this point, like, what he's going to bank on dominating.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about his, he comes from nowhere, out of nowhere, that he has such, like, this
That's a good question. It is a lot of emunah. It is a lot of emunah. I would say that in both cases, he has his back up against the wall. He has nothing to lose. Because in the previous parak, he seemed to understand that this was an avodah zarah item and you know, it's yar v'yavar. So he may as well give it a try. He definitely is a man of confidence who, when he needs to, will push. Here also, he has nothing to lose because he's going
to
be killed.
I make to piggyback, what led him to reach out? Was he specifically called?
No, they're all being killed. The Pasuk Gimel says Daniel and his friends are told they're going to die too. So Daniel says, at this point, it's better to jump in
but
than not jump in.
Did he have Ruach HaKodesh? It's your turn to speak up now.
Doesn't sound like it. But what he does is he goes to Davin. And we'll close with this.
What category?
Daniel was not any of those, which is why he didn't show up. But ultimately, the Gzeiras Maves is on all the Chachamim. So at this point, Daniel inserts himself. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to focus. There's other wisdom in the way he's, after he gets the answer, the way he brings Aryoch with him. And I tell sort of stage managers, Aryoch runs in, the Pasuk says, Bivehala. So Aryoch doesn't look like he's been lazing around and not busy killing the Chachamim. He's all ready to go. But here's this guy, Daniel, who thinks Daniel manages very, very effectively so that he can save not himself, but save all the other, the Kazdim and the Ashafim, and make sure that Aryoch looks good and solve the problem. But the core of what happens is Daniel's tefillah. The core of what happens, Daniel davens together Hanan, Mishael, Azaria, and he gets a chazon from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him the Nebuchadnezzar's dream and explains to him what it means. Everything else that happens afterwards is playing out. He actually comes to Nebuchadnezzar and tells him that already happened in Pasuk Yutes. And we'll close with this. What you see on the one hand, on the other hand, right before that, Daniel davens. And the psukim stress, he goes home and he davens b'tzibur. He doesn't daven in the palace. He finds a quiet place where he can focus and he gets Hanan, Mishael, Azaria to daven with him. As much tefillah b'tzibur as he can manage and as focused a place as he can manage. And then the hodah is lengthy. Psukim chaf, chaf aleph, chaf beis, chaf gimel, all Daniel's hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the hodah, he begins by describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in general, and then praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu in general, and then specifically thanking him for having revealed to him this critical piece of information. A little bit like Mikra Bikurim, which is the sort of the original paradigm of Jewish hodah, where you talk about in general, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, you see us Mitzrayim, Eretz Yisrael, and then specifically, here I am, and I have my farm, you take care of my farm, and I thank you by giving you these Bikurim. So I would close with, at the core of the whole parak, is Daniel's interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and five practical lessons that flow from it. To daven in as quiet, focused a place as possible. To daven when one can with others. To express hodah when one is helped, not just to daven before and forget to moda afterwards. To thank both bechlal and befrat. To look at the big picture, what to teach me at Kadosh Baruch Hu, and also specifically to thank Kadosh Baruch Hu what he gave me. And finally, to say thank you right away. Because Daniel, there's a lot going on in Daniel's life. He has a king to find and himself and thousands of other people to save. But before he even, as soon as he gets that chazon, the hodah is immediate. The hodah doesn't wait to the end of the parak. And then that's the fifth of the five lessons about the tefillah is to give hodah right away. To not shelo lahachmitz es hazman. Thank you so much. Next week we'll continue with parak gimel. I want to add one more closing idea in this recording that was left out in the live shiur. Going back to a thread we had left hanging, that was the second time the kasdim repeat themselves. Psukim Yud and Yud Aleph, when they say not once but twice to Nebuchadnezzar that no one is able to fulfill his request. No human being. Lo Isai Ena Shal Yabesha. There is no human being on planet Earth who could tell the king the dream that he himself has forgotten. When you get in Pasuk Aleph, Lo Isai, Diyichavneh. No one can tell the king what the dream itself was if the king himself doesn't remember. Why the repetition? So earlier in the Shir, we had mentioned the Malbim's approach, that it's referring to two different layers of impossibility in the task that Nebuchadnezzar has given them. They couldn't even tell the king what he himself privately knows and remembers but hasn't told them. And they certainly can't tell the king that what she himself doesn't even remember. They couldn't even access that through telepathy. I mentioned at the time that there may be another way of understanding this doubling as well. I think now we're positioned to appreciate it. And because we close this year by focusing on Daniel's interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how Daniel's direct interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this parak is at the heart of the parak. Apsukim Yud Zayin Techav Gimel, where Daniel goes and davens together with Hanai Mishael Bar Azariah. His tefillas are answered. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chazon shows him Nebuchadnezzar's dream and explains to Daniel what the dream means. And Daniel immediately responds with several psukim of hodav, thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that direct interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we see Daniel enjoy here, we haven't really seen much of it, if at all, in Perek Aleph. You certainly see Daniel cares deeply about Ratzon Hashem, but we don't really see Daniel interacting directly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that we do right here in Perek Beis. This is really the heart of the Perek, not only because the second half of the Perek is really the playing out, the unpacking of this interaction that Daniel has with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the sense that in the second half of the parak, Daniel is sharing with Nebuchadnezzar what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has revealed to him, but also because the parak ends when Daniel is done explaining the Pisron to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar actually wants to deify Daniel. It begins to bow to him in Pasuk Mem Vav, and is ready to offer karbanos nesachim to Daniel. And Daniel responds, no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, apparently Daniel pushes back, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only deity, reminiscent of Yosef's Lelokim Pisronim, Sarpuna Li, continuing that Yosef-Daniel parallel. And then the king pivots in Pasuk Mem Ches. If Daniel won't accept deification, then he offers him instead political power and prestige, which, as an aside, Daniel rejects as well, passes that on instead to Hanani Mishael Azariah. And so this refocusing on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, that's a theme throughout the parak. It is also, after all, the primary content of the dream itself, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ultimately the one who's in charge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can tell Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel who will rule after Nebuchadnezzar. And the end of the story is HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately sends Melech HaMashiach. So the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is central in when we watch Daniel interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and in the content of Nebuchadnezzar's dream and in the way Daniel interacts with Nebuchadnezzar at the end of the parak. And I would suggest that also is perhaps a deeper layer of the repetition in Psukim Yud Nid Aleph. Because there's a word that appears in both. In Hebrew, if you want to say there isn't, you use the word ain. But in Aramaic, in the Aramaic of Tanakh, you use two words, lo isai, which literally in Hebrew would be lo yesh. In the Aramaic of Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, it's contracted to a single word, lesa. Isa is there is, and lesa is short for lo isa. So in the Aramaic of the Gemara, it's a single word. But in the Aramaic of Tanakh, it's two separate words, lo isai. That phrase appears twice in Pasuk Yud, and again in Pasuk Yaf, lo isai. There is not a man who can tell this. There is not a man who could share this. There is not a man who could tell the king the dream which the king himself has forgotten. And perhaps we hear that phrase ringing and echoing because of the contrast to Daniel's first words to Nebuchadnezzar in this parak. In parak Chav Zayin, when Daniel shows up, he says, you know, the Chachamim cannot tell you. Lo Chakamin, Ashvin, Chartumin, Gazrin, Yachin, Lachavayel, Malkam. The human beings, they cannot tell you. Baram, however, Isai, there's the same word. Yesh, Isai Elah, Bishamaya Gale Razin. There is a God in heaven, and he can tell you. And allow me to tell you, Your Majesty, what the HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to tell you. So the Isai is a stark contrast. The costume we're saying, Lo Isai, there's no one. No one, maybe a God can tell you, but no human being can tell you. And Daniel, in contrast, says, Isai, there is a God. There is a God who knows, and there is a God who told me to tell you. I don't act independently. And Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, I'm a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm here to show you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. In a remarkable echo, once again, the words of Yosef, Elokim pisronim, sapru nali.